Blog Talk Radio.
This one is dedicated to all my people that are homeless and going through the struggle, man. I know what it is. This poem is called Faith. How can I get food for me and my child when I have no dime to my name? How can I get a job if I don't have the proper clothes to wear for an interview because I have no money? How can I clean myself if I don't have money to buy soap or toothpaste or anything of that nature? But I can't say that to them because they judge me regardless just because I ask them for a dollar so I can feed me and my baby. I try to find a job just with the clothes on my back, speaking to churches that will not cut me no slack with the plenty of burdens on my back, sleeping in stations to get some warmth, leaving from homeless shelters in the early morn with my daughter holding my hand, wondering what mommy's gonna do today. But my heart hurts every single day, living like this, taking bird baths and Burger King just to get my daughter ready to go to school, taking naps in public bathrooms while my daughter is at school, praying to God to free me from this madness. But then I never lose faith because I know I'm better than this. While my daughter sleeps, I cry myself to sleep, and my daughter awakes and says, "Mommy, everything is gonna be okay." She gave me the strength to live and push again. And then an angel, a pastor, came to me and blessed me with the gifts of some clothes that I needed to get the job. And God showed me the way to find strength in the pain and the struggle. And going through this now, I know not to judge. I have walked in their shoes. I have felt their pain. I have felt their hunger, their hurt. Being where I am now, sound and comfortable, I know being homeless is a part of me, like my soul is a part of me. I will promise to dedicate myself to bring light to this situation. This is nothing that you should take lightly. And remember this, never judge unless you know the whole entire story. Faith. Lots of people are out here and they're homeless, man. Please don't look at them and please don't judge them because you don't know their story. I've been there. And that's that piece by Lushy Lush, a.k.a. Moji Soled Du. Holla at your girl. Street Queens, the movement.
Yeah, man. That's your girl, Lushy Lush, me. You already know, man. That was that piece called Faith, man, dedicated to all those homeless people. Keep your head up, man. This show right here is with the panelists. Street Queens, the movement, man. You know we do it each and every Thursday at 8 o'clock, man. Shout out to all the people going down, man. I'm about to bring my Street Queens in, man. We about to go through that rundown. You know what I'm saying? We got your girl, CG, live in the building.
Peace, Queens. How y'all doing?
Peace. You got your girl Javita in the building.
Peace. Peace, Queens.
You got your girl Miss Toya in the building. Peace.
Hey, peace, Queens.
What's the deal, man? So let's get down to the nitty gritty and get to the rules, man. Tonight's topic is about adoption and homelessness. Quote for the night is, "Loving children is our greatest gift. Protecting and educating them is our whole life's work." Javita, a.k.a. Queen J, number one, one of our street queens. Yeah, you already know. Like I said, man, you guys can call in anonymous if you don't want to reveal your name. Or if you do, call in at 347-826-7722. Okay, so you can participate with the Street Queens, the movement. Callers, every 15 minutes we go to the calls, and, you know, you have 5 minutes to go ahead and speak your piece. If we don't get to everybody, man, we apologize in advance. And, you know, if you have any questions or comments or anything that's unanswered, go to www.lushradiothemovement.ning.com. And also, you know, the panelists will respond. You can always weekly check out, you know, the website, streetqueensthemovement.ning.com. Check that out. You'll see, join that up, you know, see all the updates about the Street Queens, the movement. Check out our blogging site, streetqueensthemovement.blogspot.com. You know, or email us at streetqueensmovement@gmail.com. And we'll respond to all of your questions written letters, donations, et cetera. Street Queens official P.O. Box 301-126, Capitol Heights, Maryland, 20731. Like I said, be respectful to all the panelists, all the callers. No profanity allowed, not at all. If you found disrespectful, we will take you off the air immediately. No exceptions. Okay, let's get down to it. We also have a special guest that will be calling in later, actually, that was provided in regards that Toy actually brought to the table, who will be calling in earlier. But we also have special guests, Cool V and Prina, that will be calling in also later on. 617?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay.
Hey, Peace, you're with the Street Queens of Movement.
Yeah.
How you doing today, sir?
All right, I'm doing all right. My name is Brendan Robinson. I calling in to
Brendan, yeah. I'm so sorry. What it is Brendan actually works for the New England Home for Little Wanderers, and I requested at the very last minute. He's so gracious. He's calling in to give us some information about his program that he's a program administrator at, and I wanted to be able to introduce him and give a little background information. But now that he's live on the radio, he can go ahead and give us the information that he'd like to himself. Like I said, he is a program administrator at a program in Boston, actually Jamaica Plain, correct, Brendan?
Yes, that's correct.
It's in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. It's called the New England Home for Little Wanderers. And if you could, Brendan, maybe you could give us just a brief overview of what the New England Home for Little Wanderers is.
Absolutely. New England Home for Wanderers is actually one of the first, as a lot of people would think, of orphanages in the country. We've so far removed from the orphanage title. We're actually a therapeutic program. We deal with kids who have a variety of issues between behavioral issues, kids who have been either physically abused or sexually abused or neglected in the homes. And we also have kids who, unfortunately, have lost their parents due to incarceration or death. Our particular organization has 20, I believe we're up to 25, maybe 24 programs. We had 28, but with the economy and all, we've had to make cuts in the last year or so, and we've closed, actually closed some programs. But we've definitely been around a while. Our particular site in Jamaica Plain is the biggest in the Boston area. We have up to 35 residential children that live in the program all year round. And then we also have a school on site where we have another 20 to 25 kids that come from different communities that come to our school for their needs. We service kids from anything from, like I said, kids who have been abused, who have behavioral issues. We also have an adoption program. We have after-school programs, so we're really engaged in the community and through the state, and we provide a lot of services for a lot of different needs.
Wow.
Okay, Mr. Where exactly can they find information if people want to get in contact in regards to adoption or just to give out more information so they can get in contact with the whole organization, sir?
Absolutely. Well, we have our main website, which is www.thehome.org, and that has that site is great. It has a breakdown of basically all the different programs and departments throughout the agency, including the foster care program. Our particular program, because of the nature of the kids and their issues in our programs, we have what we call therapeutic foster care. So there's a little more to it than just, going to an adoption agency and filling out the paperwork and finding a right match for you and bringing the kid in the home. A lot of our kids, unfortunately, as I like to say a lot of times, they're like the gumshoe of society that no one wants to deal with. The kids who have had, really, really traumatizing experiences as young people, and then when they get into what we call or classify normal homes, they have these outbursts. So we try to specialize in teaching the the potential parents how to deal with these kids. All the kids that are adopted through our particular agency are assigned a clinician and a social worker and caseworker, and they follow the kid, you know, through different stages of their treatment. So, you know, we really try to find the right match for the kids, because our particular kids in our population, they're not just for anybody. You have to have a certain level of patience and understanding, and it takes a serious commitment, knowing that, you know, thinking about the big picture, that these kids aren't just going to come in and be Ozzie and Harriet type of kids. These kids are the ones that are in serious need of family and love and support. And that's not always easy to do when you know, these kids are having these kind of outbursts. But there's a whole training and there's a whole process to learning how to deal with that kind of level of care. But the main thing is to try to get the kids who are in need of homes the right match, because in my opinion, it's better to have a kid in a home situation, whether they're their biological parents or not, than in a residential, institutionalized type of environment.
And that is so true, sir. And is there a phone number that that's maybe toll free or something that can call or anything like that?
Unfortunately, we don't have a toll free number, but we do have a main number where people who are interested can call and ask questions and can be connected to the right people. That number is it's a Boston number, area code 617-264-5300. And again, you know, if someone was interested or wanted to find out more information about either our program or how do we adopt a kid with special needs, or what's the process look like, am I qualified, or any of those type of questions, they're more than welcome to call. There's a young woman, Masika, who works the front desk, and she'll be more than happy to connect you to the therapeutic foster care program, and they'll be able to address any needs or questions that that caller might have.
Okay. Thank you.
It's me, Les. If I can just get some information from Brendan regarding, around the holidays, you know, there are some children that need some special attention, and maybe they might not be thought about on the, you know, on the everyday. And I think that does the New England Home for Little Wonders have, like, a holiday party or maybe something or some place that you could call to donate or contribute? Do you have that information?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. This is the holiday time is the hardest time for our particular kids. You're looking at 35 young people who don't necessarily have families, or they come from families where they were abused at. And, you know, there are a lot of these TV programs on with, you know, Santa Claus and these families having these great Christmases and stuff. And unfortunately, my kids don't have that experience. And it conjures up a lot of hard feelings for them. But yes, we actually do on our particular site in Jamaica Plain, which is 161 South Huntington Street. We have a whole building right now that we close down and just open up for donations, and people are more than welcome to come down and donate whatever they have, whether it be money, whether it be clothes, whether it be toys, or if they just want to come in and volunteer some time to see if they could help out. You know, with the world we live in today, we just don't have anybody coming and volunteering. We do, you know, Corey background checks, which is a criminal background check and that kind of stuff, just to protect our clients and our young people from further harm. But that building is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till about 6 p.m. And, again, it's right on site. When you come in, we have balloons and all kind of posters and stuff pointing to where that particular building is for the donations, because this is the hardest time right now for the kids. And we encourage people to give whatever they have, if they have anything to give at all, even if it's just a little bit of time.
Okay. Well, as a Street Queens ambassador in Boston, I am going to officially make a commitment to come in and do what I can to help, be it through donations or volunteering my time, okay, Brendan? Because we really, really greatly appreciate you calling in and giving us this insight. You do work firsthand with the children, and we know how sensitive their needs are, and it takes a very compassionate, patient, and loving person to even do the job, you two. So I just wanted to give it up to you. Just for doing what you do on a daily basis, I think it's great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, you know, the people in the field right now, it's going through what we're calling a transitional phase. We're trying to get out of the thinking of long-term residential care and trying to do what we call rapid unification and getting these kids back in the community, getting them more involved in more, you know, more normal adolescent kind of activities for kids. And we feel that that's really important. You know, the people have problems all over the world and things of that nature, but the thing that always gets me is these young people don't have that choice. It's not like they had a choice to be born into their situations, and then they have to learn how to cope and deal with you know, really hard situations. And, you know, if you can imagine being 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and, you know, being either physically abused or sexually abused and then being taken away from everything you know and being put in these residential buildings. So we're really trying to get these kids more engaged in the community, get them more involved in public schools and out of this, you know, this residential institutionalized way of living and thinking. Because unfortunately, the flip side of that is when the kids get 18 and 19 and their funding's up, and that's it. You know, they're now, you know, in society, and they're not prepared to make it in society. They can't even fill out job applications and things of that nature at 17 and 18. And I know when I got home from college or came back from college, I needed to go to mom's house for a little while to stay and to kind of get on my feet. And these kids don't have that luxury. So we're trying to look at all these different angles on how we can not only continue to provide the best quality services for these young people and get them in the families that we feel is a good match for them, but also how to prepare them, how to deal with the adult situations that they're going to be, you know, living in at 18, because they don't have the luxury of being 24, 25 and figuring out on their own. The state says when you're 17 and a half, your funding's cut at 18, and that's it. So, you know, we're working real hard trying to figure this stuff out.
So, Brandon, I'm sorry to cut you off, sir, but due to our time's sake and stuff.
Absolutely.
We truly appreciate you for calling in, and we thank you, Toy, for, you know, reaching out to him to call in and everything. And we truly, truly thank you, you know, from the bottom of my heart, from the Street Queens. Toy will be getting all the information from you in regards to your whole facility.
Yeah,
and and we'll be posting it up and stuff.
All right.
People donating everything to help out your cause. And I guess when she gets over there, I guess she'll get some more information in regards to the whole movement. But we truly, truly appreciate you, sir, for calling in today.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
Brendan,
you guys have
Brendan, you don't have to disconnect. Feel free to stay on as long as you want. It's just so we have a format, and there are some other topics you may be able to give some information on. So you can stay on as long as you'd like to.
Okay, I'll hang around for a little bit longer, but I am at work, as we talked about earlier. But thank you ladies for your time and your commitment as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we're bringing our other queen on here. Emma, E2K, what up?
Peace, queens.
Hey, Emma.
Peace. Sorry about the lateness. I'm just dealing with a lot of drama, but we're not even going to get into that. Let's just go into the topics. I'm here.
Like we said, man, we want to, you know, thank Mr. Brandon, you know what I'm saying? Thank Toy for reaching out to him in regards to the whole foster care and the adoption and everything. We have that information in regards to, you know, the whole situation in regards to that facility. The issue today is adoption and foster care, man. And the national average of kids adopted per year. In the U.S., about 200 million children are adopted from all around the world. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's a lot of different things that go on in regards to, you know, adoption, in regards to, like, you know, minorities, age, disability, how it affects their adoption, you know, over adoption, you know what I'm saying? So, ladies, you know what I'm saying? How do you feel about that in regards to minorities, ages, disability, man? Starting off with your girl, CG.
As far as adoption-wise and as far as I feel about that, I mean, there's a lot of children. We spoke recently, you know, off of the phone. There's a lot of children in the U.S. that are homeless. There's a lot of children in the U.S. that are in foster homes. There's a lot of children in the U.S. that are in bad homes, you know. And the rate that you told us about adoption just now, if you look at the amount of Americans that go overseas to adopt children, you know, when there's so many kids out here who need families. And I don't judge anybody because I haven't adopted a child, period, you know. But there's so much in our own country that we need to, you know, attend to. There's so much here that we you know, we've got to put our arms around and wrap our arms around. We haven't even, you know, taken care of our kids here. And, you know, we all did our research in our own certain states, and going in and investigating this stuff, it was shocking to me, especially in my state, you know, to find out how many kids don't have homes or how many kids, you know, are out there. And when I say kids, I'm talking, you know, even 18, I don't consider you able, you know, to just be considered, oh, you're able to take care of yourself. But, I mean, this show kind of touched home because a lot of my friends now, and they're beautiful people, but they grew up in foster homes, and they grew up, you know, through adoption. And you would never know, but that's not the case with a lot of people. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it a lot of people, I'm trying to word this, I don't know how to put this. A lot of people can't handle this as they grow up. It weighs on them mentally.
Yeah, they have scars.
Yeah, you're scarred. Exactly.
Emotionally scarred.
Yeah, definitely emotionally. And the people that I've been able to be around, you know, they hide that well. But if you get down to it and you talk to them, you don't forget the stuff that you go through with that. You don't forget that there weren't people there for you. You know, you don't forget that you were passed from person to person. You don't forget that you were lonely and neglected. You know, I mean, I just don't know how we as street queens can go about changing that.
I think one child at a time.
Yeah.
I just think our contribution is very important. Like I mentioned with the New England Home for Little Wanderers, I'm going to walk actually to the facility, and I'm going to find out what I, as an individual, can do to contribute. Because, you know, around this time in the holidays, I can only imagine what a child may feel when they're sitting inside of this, you know, this residential home. And granted, it's a great opportunity for them because they need some place to live and some people to care for them, but they probably feel very alone, and probably, you know, the children that are around them. And I'm just speaking in general, I don't know, but they may feel like that's their family. And
yeah,
I feel like they need somebody to step up and say, okay, we know you're here, we care about you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I think those are some things that we can do.
And going down the line, Javita, how do you feel about this situation?
Well, you know, first to start off, you know, I would like to say that I do appreciate Brendan for calling in. And just like him in the state of Georgia, we have Georgia Safe, which is also a training program for adoption and helping families find that right match so the kids aren't returned or anything like that. And their website is actually www.gasafe.org. And like I said, they do the same kind of work that Brendan does, only here in the state of Georgia, and a really great organization that reaches out in terms of giving parents that training even before they become foster and adoptive parents. You know, in addition to that, when you're talking about adoption and minorities and the issues that they face, you know, it's staggering because the numbers of them have increased so much nationwide since the early 1980s, and the rate of kids who need adopting. Like in the state of Georgia, we have a bicentennial total of 493 kids who didn't who got adopted, and then by the end of the year, fiscal year, it was like 664. You know, that number changed about 171%. I mean, 171 kids, but that's only 34.7% in a grand total of children who need to find homes. It's very shocking and very disturbing when you have such a high percentage of children who need homes, especially when you consider that minorities and persons with disabilities are most likely to not be adopted, especially older kids, because of their age. As a matter of fact, an estimated 469,073 children were in foster care at the end of 1994, and of those 4% were under age one, and 31% were 1 to 5, 35% were 6 to 12, and 30% were 13 and older. Now, almost 47% were African American, and 32% were white. Now, 14% were Hispanic, and 1% were Native American and Alaskan. And between 1983 and 1993, the most common growth in foster care, you know, was the highest in that particular time frame. And that's really alarming in terms of numbers of children who need to have homes. And the fact is that the children who are legally free and awaiting adoption. 19% have been waiting for adoption less than 6 months. That was back in 1990, and 12% have been waiting 6 to 12 months. 21% have been waiting 1 to 2 years, and 46% have been waiting 2 years or longer. I mean, most of your kids, the older they are, the longer they sit on the waiting list, and again, the harder they are to place because they have more and more issues, and parents tend to want to have a younger child or a perfect child. And until we get out of that mindset, we're going to continue to have this problem.
And that's true. And Emma, how do you feel about the situation, Emma?
Wow, that really touches home for the simple fact that ever since I was a young girl, I've always been raising other people's children. I've always had friends that were on drugs. At that time, they were doing crack or they were whatever in the street and had little babies. And I would be the one that they would drop their kids off so they can go on their mission or whatever, and I have to care for these kids that I don't even know their health issues. And my mother always used to say, why do you do that? You know, one day they're not going to come back. And I never thought about that I was, you know, that I was doing it to help them go get high. I was thinking about the kids. Like, if they don't leave them with me, they're going to leave them to whoever that can do anything to them, you know. So I kind of thought that I was doing my part. And maybe in a way I was, and maybe in a way I wasn't, but, you know, that was my, you know, my mind frame. You know, I have children now, personally, that I'm raising. I have no biological children, but yet I'm raising two kids and about to get another one, you know, for different reasons with all of them. But the point is that, you know, CG, I think you said earlier, oh, I don't know if it was Toy who had came out and said, you don't know what we can do as street queens for these kids. And I told you it's one child at a time. You know, we do it one kid at a time. Even me raising kids that don't belong to me, I'm right now trying to be a foster parent, you know, trying to see what other kid. And you know what they did? I went to the class and they gave me a booklet. A booklet. When I tell you a booklet of papers to sign that I think you'll be signing those papers for like 2 weeks. They make it so hard for even people like me or people that are really genuinely interested in stepping in and actually generally, you know, wanting to do something for kids. It's hard. They don't make it easy at all. And that's why I don't even understand how some of those these parents skip through the loop, the ones that really abuse these kids, because they screen you like worse than going into a prison. I mean, you know, you get FBI clearance, you got to get child abuse history clearance and all type of clearances and all type of things they make you go through. And I'm not saying that I'm not going to go through it, but what I'm saying is that they make it real difficult, and I can see how other people will get discouraged, you know, because at first you're like amped up, like, I'm going to make a difference, you know, I'm going to get a child and whatever. And then when you get there, just the stories that they tell you, they were telling me stories that I was just baffled about all the wrong things that happened to these children in their care, mind you, in their care already, you know. So we think that they're better off in the foster system. Then I don't think they're better off than if they would have been with their parents that are getting high, you know. So where do these kids have to turn to or look up to? Nothing. And it's horrible. It's horrible that our children should have to, you know, be exposed to that and live that way, you know, because they are generally people that do want to do things for them. It's just they make it really difficult, you know. And I do my part all the time whenever I can. That's why it's so important for me every year to try to contribute as many causes as possible when it comes to women and children. You know, women is my is definitely women's issues is definitely my, you know, my passion because of E2K. But, you know, if we help the women, that goes and instills in the children, you know. So if we help these women, you know, we empower these women and we show these women that, you know, they can do all these things, that actually benefits the children, or the children that they can have, all the children that they can possibly reach in their lifetime, you know. And that means a lot. It's just a trickle effect, you know. We have to let these women know that, you know, yeah, we're stronger than this, and we can do it one child at a time, even if you can save one or two. I mean, I know there's millions. It's impossible for us to reach the millions. But if you can do it one or two child, even you don't got to adopt them, but go just to visit them, like Toy said, let them know that we know you're here, that you're alive, that we, you know, we understand that, you know, that you're in this world, and as us, as our parents, we're going to be responsible. We got to take some type of accountable and responsibility toward these children, because these are our children. You know, these are our children, and I'm speaking from someone that's raising kids that are not biologically mine, and will continue to raise 10 more if God permits, you know?
That's beautiful, Emma.
That's the truth. Toy, how do you feel about that situation, Toy?
I personally, at one point I was 20, I'm 30 years old now, I was 25 years old, and I took custody of my niece because she was, you know, going through a transitional phase of, you know, moving from with her mother and my blood uncle, but she was having a hard time because, you know, she was in an abusive situation with my aunt. Well, she's not my real aunt, but, you know, my uncle's ex-wife. She was in an abusive situation, so she was taken from the home by DSS, which is Department of Social Services, and placed with her dad. Her dad, getting her at, you know, 15, was having a really hard time. So, it's interestingly enough, she came to me, and I took her in because I wasn't going to let her run the streets because that's what she was looking to do. She started running because she felt like no one understood her and no one cared. You know, so I took her in, and I kept her with me for a year and a half. And throughout that year and a half, not only did she get back on track in school, she started to get very organized and focused on a goal, you know, for herself because she just felt lost. You know, so I can only imagine, yes, she's my blood, she's my relative, but if I was in a situation where I could, you know, take in another child, I would do it, you know, without a second thought. But what I will do, like I said before, is I am going to go out and I'm going to volunteer because I think that these children need some encouragement. They need some role models because you can imagine, like, feeling lost. You need someone to show you that, you know, beyond the current situation that you're in, you have to discover your dreams within your reality. So looking backwards, you know that you've come from a troubled past. It's hard. It's hard to even find the strength to go on. Or maybe you just don't know what direction to take. You have to, you know, get resourceful. And I feel like I could provide that, you know. Sometimes, you know, when you're in, let's say you're 18 years old and you just got, you know, put out of a system, you don't know what to do next. And I feel like, you know, if I go and volunteer, maybe I can educate these kids on the resources that are available to them because they are going to be independent very soon and, you know, encourage them, you know, mentally, you know, just to be strong because it's a hard road and it's harder from where they came from to where they're going, and it's just going to be an incredible battle.
And that's true. And Miss Lissette, I know you've been on there. Peace.
Peace.
Why does the phone sound like that?
Oh, no. Is that Lissette? I mean, it sounds real ugly.
It sounds like a computer.
I'm calling. I hope it's a minute.
I think you're going to have to call back.
All
you
right.
Okay? Can I understand you?
I don't know if that was Lissette. I don't know what did that sound like.
Yeah, that sounded real, real scary.
She just has to call back, has to hang up and call back.
Yeah, that's cool.
If that's you, Lissette, we let you, though. Just call back in. I don't know if the computer was up or what. You know what I'm saying? But Mr. Brandon, I know you're still on the line. How do you feel about that situation, Mr. Brandon?
I actually think you women are pretty brilliant and on some good stuff. I think, one, what can we do? And I heard a couple of times, you know, one kid at a time and things like role modeling, and that's exactly what it starts with. I've been in this field since 1996, and my mentality is taking it one child at a time, and through that course of time, I've helped thousands of kids. So I really think that it just starts with a day-by-day thing. And another young woman had some concerns and brought up how hard it is to adopt and the process of it all. And I will say this, unfortunately, every time something evil in the world happens, a new standard or a new protocol is installed. And this system has gotten so hard to adopt these kids, and that's just a reflection of what's going on in societies and what some of these families are doing to some of these kids in their homes after they adopt. The true monsters, they learn how to avoid to fly what we call under the radar, where they're not red flags. They don't have criminal records and things of that nature. In Massachusetts this past year, we've had four kids that were killed within foster care, and they're the ones who passed all the screening. And then we had another child, and it's a big media story right now, where the stepfather or the foster father beat her so bad that she was in a coma, and the hospital wanted to take her off life support, and she wound up living and responding.
Oh my God!
Wow. So unfortunately, every time something of that nature happens, we implement new protocols and we make it harder and harder because we're really trying to protect our kids and keep them out of those kind of situations. And it is hard. And I've sat down with families and have heard their frustrations and things of that nature about how come it's so hard and this and that and the other. And me being on the inside, having this inside information, the ones who come to you smiling and what can we do? What can we do? A lot of times those are the ones who wind up abusing those kids. It's not easy on who we entrust our kids with, and we do have some, 90% of the people out there really genuine, and they really want to help, and they really want to see what they can do to make a difference in the world and leave their mark. But again, we have to protect our children from the monsters of society, and it is unfortunate. But to that young woman who was talking about staying in there and hanging in there and doing what they can, that's the kind of person I appreciate, because that's the true sacrifice and commitment that these kids need. Someone who's, says, I'm in it for the long haul, and if they got to check me in and out or whatever they got to do, I'm here for them. And that's the most important thing.
Could you hold on on the line with us still?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much right there. I hope this is Lissette.
I'm back. Do I sound normal?
Yes.
Sound much better?
Yes.
You don't know what I just went through.
You sounded like Robo Girl.
Three phones and a dead battery. I'm glad to be here.
Peace, Queen. How do you feel about that whole situation, Queen?
You know, it's ironic because I don't know if you ladies know, I work at a music dance school, and today we had a visitor, and this visitor was 14 years old, and Ankara of Making the Band is one of our vocal coaches at the facility, and he came by basically to fulfill one of his dreams, which is to actually take vocal lessons and everything. What I didn't know was that this 14-year-old was actually trying his best to be adopted, so he came into the facility, he sang with, celebrity coach, and I found, he was well-dressed, and at the end of, I think it was Channel 4 that came by to film everything, and they're going to air it soon. After the fact, I find out that this kid, this teenager is, in the shelter, and he's pretty much doing everything as far as, cleaning up his image or, trying to make him a little more appealing to get adopted. And that's
he's, marketing himself.
It broke my heart. If you saw him, he was a good-looking teenager, really timid and quiet, And I said, wow, this is really ironic because here we are covering, foster care and adoption. And then this kid, I had no idea. He walks in, and I'm like, Lord, you keep doing this to me. What's going on? What's going on, But the reports are, it's sad. It's really sad. There was actually a 22% increase compared to last year in regards to families who are entering the shelters in New York City. And many of those people, have children, and it's so sad. The average family stays in the shelter for about 11 months, and it costs the city about $30,000 a year for a homeless family to stay in a shelter, and about $24,000 a year for a single adult. So this is very serious, very serious. And I've never been affected by, being homeless myself. And to be honest, I don't know many people who were, growing up or anything. But it's just like the person in me, I feel so sad to even hear that people are going through this stuff. It's really, really sad.
Wow, that's what it is. And on that note, ladies, hold on for me. I'm going to go to a quick commercial, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the molestation and the abuse going on in some of these facilities. All right?
It's your girl, Lushy Lush, man. Did you ever think about picking up a magazine to see nothing but the hottest ladies that's doing hot things in the industry, from models to business owners? We trying to find out the beauty outside and the beauty within. So if you thought about that, pick up E2K Magazine at www.myspace.com/E2K Magazine or www.everything2.com. Or email them at E2KMagazine@gmail.com, man. It's nothing. Holla at your girl, man. Pick up E2K Magazine and support them in their movement, man. Like Nike say, just do it. It's your girl, Lushy Lush. You know I'm always rocking with my twin, Cool B, the infamous one-man trunk hustlers, because I'm a hustler all day, every day. It's your girl, Lushy Lush, man. I don't blow the whistle. I stand for people, you heard? You just officially got stamped. Log on, www.trunkhustlers.com. Yeah.
This is Natalia. You're live on Lush Radio. It's going down on Lush Radio Live.
Yeah, man. It's Lushy Lush, man, with the Street Queens, the movement. We presenting to you, man, adoption and homelessness, man. It's a serious problem going on, man. We got professionals on the line. You know, we got all my strong queens on the line doing our 1-2. This is how we do. Now, we were just talking about the average rate of foster children, you know what I'm saying, in the system. We're talking about the molestation and the abuse, man. It's a serious problem going down. You know what I'm saying? Starting off with Miss Toy, how you feel about that situation?
Oh, no. See, this is the deal. That right there is something that is going to open me wide up and just have me crying all over the place. And I know y'all don't want to deal with that today. I cannot talk about that. I'm not even informed on it. I tried to do some research on it, but unfortunately, I didn't come up with anything solid that I could contribute. So, unfortunately, I'm going to leave this one alone, and maybe someone that has some more solid information can contribute, because I don't. But when we're all done with this, can I give out some information on events going on in Boston surrounding adoption for the holidays when we're done?
Yeah, when we're done, yeah.
Okay.
And CG, how do you feel about that situation in regards to the molestation and abuse?
A lot of the molestation and abuse that happens isn't even reported, you know, and we got to look at it like that. I mean, statistics will show us, you know, that a certain amount or a certain percentage of kids, or I'm not even just going to talk about kids, because there's, you know, in women's shelters or in homeless shelters, it happens in there as well. You know, a lot of the people who volunteer aren't all good. You know, we have those people who really do things from the heart and who really do things to help, you know, and serve, and then you got people who go in there and try to take advantage of what they consider to be weak. And it's a shame, because these people go in there for, you know, for a place to get away, you know, for refuge, and they're attacked. The kids who are in foster homes, I know a young lady who went from, I'm sorry, I don't want to get this wrong, I believe she said 11 foster homes by the time she was 13 years old.
Wow.
And molested in three of those homes.
Oh, my God.
And she was molested in three of those homes. And, you know, she's an adult now, beautiful woman, very strong, you know, and an excellent mother. And what it did to her was, you know, she feels like sometimes she's hard on her daughter, because she's very, very, very protective. But can you blame her? She doesn't want to let her daughter out of her sight. She doesn't want anyone around her daughter, because she feels like no one was there to protect her or watch over her. And if somebody was there, you know, and shielded her, then it wouldn't happen to her. And
wow.
It's like, you know, it's sad, because it's like these people take advantage of them because they feel that they're weak and they feel that they're helpless. And in some situations, they are. How do you fight back when there's nobody in your corner fighting for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true, Cheesy, for real. That's some serious stuff. Javita, how do you feel on that, man?
Oh, man, I agree with CG 100% on that. You know, it's a very hard topic, especially for me, to talk about in terms of the molestation and adoption in foster care homes, because the amount of abuse that takes place with them being transferred, you know, a lot of you, like Brendan was saying, you do have to fill out a lot of paperwork because there are a lot of pedophiles and undercover rapists, both male and female, who are actually trying to adopt because they want to abuse. And a lot of them feel like, you know, that since they're not biologically my child, I can do whatever I want to them. You know, I can get the kid, I can abuse them, I can rape them, I can turn them into my little Cinderella and do whatever I want in the house. And that's supposed to be good, and they're supposed to be grateful and thank me for the mistreatment that that they're given. And it's totally unfair and unacceptable. And I understand completely about that whole moving on an average, because, you know, children have an average of 3 different foster care providers, foster care placements throughout the course of them moving. And the longer a child remains in foster care, in most cases, the more frequent the move. So, you know, some have been moved to 20 or 30 different homes in 5 to 7 new schools, and that too plays a major role in terms of academics and them keeping up in their classwork. And of course, that is an alarming rate. And as far as one thing that I want to say that we didn't touch on when we were talking about what can we do to help, the main thing to me is that I want to share some things with you all. There are more than, of course, 523,000 children in the United States as of 2007. That's a 90% increase is what I was getting at earlier from 1987. That's 53 males and 47% is female. Now, what we can do to help is increase the budget and get out there and raise money so that these foster adoptive families can have some additional funding. And in addition to that, more agencies and more funding for them so that they can give more parents the proper training and proper education on how to deal with fostering and adoptive families, because in the U.S. they spend about $22 million, and that's $5 million of federal government balance in state country government, and that provides for children and youth in foster care. That averages out to about $40,000 per child, but that's $5 billion from the federal government, and that's not that's a lot of money. But when you look at it in terms of $40,000 per child, it's not nearly enough. And, of course, we have 120,000 children and youth who had to have their parental rights terminated in order just to be eligible for adoption. And that's the main problem that a lot of foster and adoptive families face when they're talking about adoption, that they're willing to adopt, but they don't want to have the emotional flingback. Like I've had some, you know, experiences in my family with people trying to adopt and family members adopting. And it's been very difficult for them because of the jerking around and them taking the child and placing them back with the parent and then giving the child back and then placing them back with the parent until finally it's like, look, it took 3 years to adopt the child. But it's a long process, but once those rights have been terminated, it's up to us as individuals to step up to the plate and say these kids are wanted, and not to be looking over here, there, and yonder. Not saying that you can't go overseas and adopt kids and that's not a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing anytime you rescue any child from any type of situation. But it's important for us, too, to remember the kids who live here at home and remember that we have an obligation and a duty to them as well.
Right.
That's true. And I don't know if it's Emma back, because it looked like, is Emma there?
Yeah, I just run out, so I'm on the cell phone.
How you feel about that, about the molestation and the abuse?
Well, you know, it's horrible. Again, I'm going through, you know, taking the adoption classes and all that, and they talk to you, and they let you know, like, all these horrible things that happen. They let you know that, you know, there was a case when I was taking a training that was telling us that they had a 4-year-old that was in there that was abused, you know. He was abused by his dad, and they pulled him out the home, and, you know, he's in the foster system now. So his thing now is he eats as a way, I don't know, to protect himself. So he's always hungry. So, you know, they were asking us questions, like, in other words, what, how would we handle that? Like, what would we do in that position that we have a child that wants to just eat all the time, as opposed to just saying he's greedy and really understanding that it's a lot more than that. It's what he's hiding, you know, harboring inside. Like, he could sit and eat a whole thing of pizza, 4 years old, and keep saying still he's hungry. In actuality, it's a mental thing. It's not that he's hungry. It's just, I guess, that's the, at his age, the way to deal with his abuse, you know? And that happens to nearly all of them. Nearly all the children that are in there, they're abused one way or another. That's the reason why they're in the system. I mean, they're not in the system just for nothing, you know? And it's sad. It's sad because there's no way to really protect them. And you know what? It's not only the adoptive parents and the foster parents that can abuse them. It's been known facts too that it's been people that even work at these facilities that have done to the, things to them too, like the priest that you know that's in church and you think he's the almighty mighty and has you know molested our children. So this happens everywhere. This happens everywhere, and it could come from anywhere. You know,
true.
That's just. It's just sad because you want to do so much, you know, and it's just sad because they can it can happen anywhere from anybody. They're not really protected. And so how do we make them feel protected when they know it can come from anywhere? Anyone can touch them. I mean, that's horrible, yo. There's a lot of sick people out here.
True. There's no lie about that. Lissette, how do you feel about that situation, Lissette?
I have to be honest. I have tears in my eyes. I had a close friend who, growing up, had been abused by his father. And what the dad did was basically forced the brothers and sisters to have sex with one another, as brothers and sisters. And what happened was they went through the foster care system, and they went through it all over again. They were raped, they were beaten, molested, and it's like, who are watching these people who are watching these kids, you know?
You know what?
It's really emotional for me because that, only a monster would do something like that.
You know what?
And what I wanted to comment on, something that Emma said earlier, was that they make it so difficult for people to become foster parents, even though she has a genuine love, you know, and you know she's genuine about it. I think that it's a good thing that they're gonna grill people like that because it's like, imagine if they didn't, you know? What about those predators out there who, you know, like somebody mentioned earlier, would become a foster parent under the radar just to molest these kids or make them, you know, their Cinderellas and whatnot, you know?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut it. Let me just say this this one other story while I was there that the lady was sharing with us. There were two kids, an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, and they were having sex with each other, brothers. They were brothers having sex with each other. They went into the foster system. You know, in the foster system, when you're siblings, they don't like to separate you. They like to keep you, you know, together as long as they could. So they were adopted by the same person that, you know, wanted only one of them, but, of course, took the two of them, not to separate the siblings. So this lady went in, you know, adopted them. One day they were in their room. She goes in without knocking, and they're having sex together. So she calls back the agency and tells the agency, look, you know, they're having sex or whatever. Do you know what the people in the agency told her? Well, who told you? You should have knocked on the door. You can't just walk in on them like that.
What?
It's what they said. It's what they replied to her. What do you mean? She has to knock on the door, you know, and they told her, you knew this, you knew that they that this, you know, happened to them before you adopted them. What is?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But you know what? You know something, ladies, that I want to add? When a child is molested, there's a lot of feedback on the line. Do you guys all hear it?
Yes.
Okay. When a child is molested, what happens to the child is that their mind is opened up. For now, their one-dimensional way of thinking and their innocence is stolen. I mean, it's like from now on, that urgency that they feel because their sexuality has been tapped into is now wide open. So now, even if they may be in a residential program, they may be in a foster home, they still try and seek out that that urge. You know, they try to satisfy that urge because someone has tapped into their sexuality at a young age when it's never supposed to be tapped into. So these are the unfortunate things that happen to children in foster homes, in their regular homes, in residential programs. But I think that children need to be educated after, you know, they're molested or raped or sexually abused. They need to be educated and taught how to, stop within themselves, you know, stop those needs and stop those urges, or how to protect themselves when they're put into a foster home, how to protect themselves in general. You can't trust anybody. I mean, you have to protect yourself. And I think the children need to be educated maybe from the facilities that they're coming from about protecting themselves from predators.
And that's the truth on and what she's talking about. And we were talking about people slipping through the cracks. I'm in the DMV area in D.C. They said in the district, this district is paying $27.6 million a year in federal and city funds in oversight to 100 of parents who adopt children from the city foster care program. All right? You got a lady in the DMV that was all over the news. This lady had two girls frozen in the freezer. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Two kids frozen in the freezer. Okay? The other sisters escaped out of there. Okay? And a situation happened like this. Renee Bowman, right, in the district, right? And basically, you know, they in Southern Maryland, she was in the D.C., adopted the kids from the D.C. system, right? Okay. But the thing about it, she was still getting the money from D.C., but she moved to Southern Maryland, right? Okay. She had no criminal background, no none of that, right? Everybody thought she was sane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They said that this woman starved children to death, okay?
Oh, Jesus.
Right? District officials consider that they said that, you know what I'm saying, that that the children were enrolled in school, right? They were immunized, right? But there was no school attendance for none of these girls. Okay. And it was the lady was receiving $2,400 a month under this program.
Wow.
District
it's
of
a flawed. Yeah.
Okay, she was getting this money for these girls that she done killed already.
What?
One of the little girls escaped, okay, and she complained for physical abuse and everything, and you know what I'm saying, emotional abuse, just beat the mess out of children, okay? She didn't want to feed these children. She starved them to death. She put the kids in a freezer.
Okay, she's a psycho, and that is just the type of things that happen. I mean, we can't blame it always on the system. There's flaws in every system. I mean, the system is employed by imperfect people. So you look at it, you know, things are going to happen. But just like Brendan brought about earlier, whenever there's a problem, there are, you know, different things that are implemented to try and solve these problems or prevent them from happening again.
This is the thing, though. She got these children. After she left D.C., no social services, nobody came to see what was going on with these kids. All of her neighbors didn't know that she never had kids there.
Yeah.
Nobody knew that she had kids.
And that's horrible. You know, that there was a situation in Camden, New Jersey, and I live in South Jersey in this area, where there was a couple who they adopted four, they had four foster children. The boys were from ages, this was in like 2003. The boys were from like ages to 19, from 9 to 19. The oldest one was 19 years old, and he weighed 45 pounds and was 4 feet tall because he was starved. They were all they were starved, and I mean, to the point where you couldn't even recognize them. They showed the pictures of these kids.
Oh, my gosh.
19 years old, 45 pounds.
What? How is she even alive?
Yes.
That is craziness.
Yep.
Will to live is something.
Mhm. And I'll never forget that. And they went and they arrested them, like early in the morning, and it was just crazy.
I have to give credit to the system in Massachusetts, because while I had care of my niece, they came and did, you know, sporadic checks and so on and so forth. They would always stay on top of, you know, how she was doing in school, and, you know, the different things that went on with her. You know, they always would, you know, come and talk to me about it. So I felt like I had a support system from her social worker. But I know that I think it's, sometimes the social workers are very aggressive and they're very on point with, you know, checking on their families. But some are not as, you know, hardworking. And that just breaks my heart, man, because that's crazy. These kids shouldn't even have to deal with this type of stuff.
And that takes us on the next subject. How much money and assistance do foster kids receive? You know what I'm saying? Once they age out of the system, you know. I think Javita might have that information on that. How much money do they actually receive once they age out? Once they turn 18?
Well, here is they receive very little. Some kids say they got like $200, and it depends. It varies from state to state. I know that much in terms of how much they get for aging out of the system. But it's very sad because, you know, these kids age out and they're just basically put out onto society with nothing to eat or to you know, nowhere to sleep or to place their head, and it leads to other things and other problems in society. But as far as them having an exact number and amount, they don't. And, then, of course, it goes back to having shelters and homes for them to go to once they age out of the system, because a lot of these foster parents tell them, you know, you're 18 years old, get your stuff, get out. I'm not getting any more money from you, and that's it.
And that's the truth. A lot of situations, it depends on the state. Some people can get, even with the Keisha Cole system, she was in the foster care system, she said she was that they gave her, you know, a check. And so some people might be a couple of thousand, you know, some of them help them with the health care, some of them don't, you know, some of them get maybe a couple of, you know, dollars, and then they're sent out there with nobody to go to. They got to hope if they can get anywhere. Some are blessed and some aren't. Some are in different statistics. And that's the reality and the harsh reality that we have to face. Going on to the next one is identifying programs available to assist adoption, foster care, homeless persons becoming an independent. You know what I'm saying? You know, because they go through situations where they fall behind classes because they stressed out, because they don't know if they're going to, you know, they're going to kick them out soon or what's the different situation, man. So, you know, CG, how you feel about that situation?
I mean, the same thing goes for this. There's a lot of programs out there that I feel, you know, if people do the research, you know, once it's put in front of you, you do the research and you can find out about it. But it's once you find those programs, how willing they are to help. You know, anyone can start something like Emma said, you know, everything that they put her through to try to get a child. And when you get these programs that say they're willing to help, how many times do they turn somebody down because you don't fit the criteria, because you don't qualify, or because, you know, and that's the thing. I think the people who are starting organizations and the people who consider starting ones like us, you know, what we do, we need to make sure that we don't, of course you're going to have guidelines. Of course you can't just say, you know, anybody can come and do this and do that, but why shouldn't your arms be open and welcome to anybody who needs help? You know, there are going to be people who try to scam. There are going to be people who try to get over. But for the most part, a lot of these programs do have criteria that you have to meet before you're even accepted. You know, there's some programs that won't even take a foster child in. You know, they won't even take you in because they feel you're not adoptable. And, yeah, it trust me, it's sad. I'm actually, as we're talking, going through the list for Friendship House, for the program that you guys know that we do the Christmas party for every year. And as we're talking about all this, I'm going through the list. It's a list of 164 kids this year. And, you know, we do the Christmas list. We have the Secret Santa where they do the Christmas list, and we send the list out to the foster parents. And they so-called ask the kids what they want for Christmas, and then they send the list back. And this is the third year that I've been involved in this, and there's a list of kids on here who have asked for the same thing 3 years in a row, and it doesn't make sense. So I called, you know, the company that we're working with, and they're like, oh, we didn't look into it, because they trust in the foster parents, you know. But if and what can we say? You know, I don't want to just leave these kids out, but you kind of know that there's some, you know, people scamming the system with this. So it's like people are giving their all, you know, we're giving up our money, we're giving up our time, we're dedicating everything into this to try to make these kids, you know, even people who don't have it, you know, just have a happy time for once in their life. And it's still people who try to get over.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to always be people who try to get over in any situation.
And there will, though.
I mean, yeah, it's. I'm telling you, I'm looking at the list right now, and I'm not going to say the kids' names, but I've got, there's three kids right now that I'm looking at in front of me, and this is just the first page, that I've gotten these kids cameras 3 years in a row. You know, digital cameras 3 years in a row. There's no way. You're 14 and 15 and 16. I mean, there's no way. And what can you say? You can't, you know, turn them down because that's the only thing they have on their list.
And that's true. That's true on that one right there, man. And because I think we have our special guest on the line, so we're going to move on to the lack, which I guess we can combine this, the lack of homes for children in foster care. How does that contribute to, you know, drugs, prostitution, theft, rape, violent behavior, you know, and you know, why does the government only assist you if the child is disabled, or if you have a child and you're pregnant? You know what I'm saying? Why don't they help these children that are in foster care? And that leads into, you know, homelessness. Like, our average people are dying every single day, you know what I'm saying, in the streets on the hot weather, people dying of hypothermia and stroke, sick, you know what I'm saying? What's really good? What's really going on? After they leave these homeless, after they leave these foster care and they kicked out, what left? They're homeless. What do we do? You know what I'm saying? And on that note, I'm bringing the caller. 757, you're live on Lush Radio with the Street Queens, the movement, all the sisters on the panel. Peace, caller.
Peace and greetings. What's happening to all my Street Queens? What's going on, Lush? Everybody on this CG, all the Street Queens is doing their thing. JV, the whole team. Big up, it's your boy Cool V. How you feeling?
Hey.
Fish, you heard the whistle.
Hey, Cool V.
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing tonight?
All right.
Wonderful.
Hey, I want to just compliment CG. Well-spoken and well-said, and there's a lot of that going on. Well-spoken.
Thank you.
And Cool V is our guest today in regards to, you know, he has a operation, an organization, which is our brother organization called Operation CGS, you know, and something that hits the home in regards to, you know, you know, becoming homeless out of the foster care system, and then, you know, going out and then they become homeless, you know. How do you feel about that, Cool V? You know, tell them about your, you know, your organization and, you know, tell us about how you feel about that situation.
Well, I mean, both of you guys hit it on the nail, especially CG. I definitely respect what you're saying, because that's the whole reason why Operation We Care was formed, for two different reasons. One, I think that people who start these organizations need to be relatable. You got too many people starting things, and, of course, you know, it's easy to say you're doing something. Some people do it for credit. Some people do it for what's real to their heart. I formed Operation We Care because two reasons. One, I used to be a homeless person, so, I mean, I know the pains and the stereotypes that people lay on people that become homeless, because sometimes, you know, we all fall short. Some things may happen in life where, you know, tragedies may strike that may leave a person homeless, and especially for the kids. It's funny that you mentioned how, you know, a lot of these kids are becoming homeless, because I have a company that we're working with here. There's an organization that they do the same thing for, you know, battered, you know, teens and youth. They actually offer houses, and they get these kids in houses. Now if these kids are not meeting a certain criteria, they're being kicked out, and they're back on the street, and they're recycled again. So, I mean, the whole process is being started over and over. Then you got, you know, a lot of these halfway houses are overfilled. I mean, if we can't even fill our veterans, you know what the rest of these other people, the homeless, are going to be looked over eventually. You know what I'm saying? That's just a no-brainer. The reason why I started Operation We Care is basically it's an organization, and it's not a non-for-profit totally. We have non-for-profit segments, but the reason why I chose to go for-profit is because I worked for various non-for-profit organizations, My Brother's Keeper, Mad Dads, you know, Youth Against Drugs, et cetera, et cetera. The problem was is that in these programs, there's always a glass ceiling. If you're really trying to be effective, you know, it's only but yet so much you can be because, they, you know, you only get so much from the government. They cut you off on this level of grants. You can only do so many things. I mean, like, for example, I'm going to give you, we back in the days, I mean, when I used to do Mad Dads and we dealt with homeless people, and this is back in the early 90s, okay? We used to go over to go to a lot of the restaurants and ask them when they were done with the food, okay, can we take the food to the homeless people and go to the shelters and feed it? I mean, it's gotten so bad now that the U.S. government has sanctioned a lot of these places where they can't even give, donate the food that they have left over. So instead of it going to homeless shelters or people who are hungry, it's going in a trash can. Okay, and that just shows how gluttony the U.S. is for wasting. We waste everything. We don't value stuff. And the rich people, a lot of people have these stereotypical views of homeless people that, okay, these are all people that either drug addicts or they're alcoholics, and these are people who, you know, just made bad decisions. They don't realize, and it became real just recently in the last month, if a lot of people pay attention to the news, over 85,000 U.S. Americans are now homeless who once was middle class. Okay, and that goes to show that, you know what, it happens to us all, okay? Everybody right now is pretty much one paycheck away from being homeless in everyday working class America because things have tightened up. And like I said, I started this whole process because, A, I was homeless. I had to relate to it. I have a strong passion for it. I've always been involved in community. And then I started point blank because there was nothing. I was seeing so many young brothers I was running into and young sisters that were out. You know, these programs were not relatable. You know, they had some people who were working these programs who were pissed off because they were volunteers. And what happened was this treatment was transponded upon the people who really needed the help. And those people that were coming and seeking help, these people were not relating to them. It's just like welfare. A lot of these cats, when you go on welfare, they tell you, okay, you can get on welfare, but you got to have an address. You got to have, you know, this or that. And then when you go there, they sanction people so high, they make that process so turbulent when it comes to African Americans and a lot of different minorities that, you know, it's crazy. It's a recycle. You go back in the cycle because you can only make so much. When you get a job, you can't even make a job making X amount of dollars because if you do, they're cutting you off. So you're going right back to the system, or you can't even get welfare because you don't have a home. I mean, I'm in a shelter, okay? I'm a home. I mean, it's point blank, but you got to have a physical address. So so many things they meet that they up the criteria that a lot of people will never receive, like CG was saying, the support and the aid that they need. So a lot of families and kids go in need. And now the amount of homeless teens are amazing. We are now 35% in the U.S. That's sickening. That's larger than any other country out there right now that, you know what I mean, that's like the U.S., okay? You got the little other, you know, overseas countries that's dealing with that, you know, those epidemics, but where a country as rich as the U.S., this should not be happening. If we can go overseas and fight and feed everybody else's land, and meanwhile, we got, what was it, 45% of our U.S. veterans are homeless. What are we fighting for? You're fighting to come home homeless? I met a gentleman that was from New Orleans, came back home, what was it, like 2 years ago, and he's a good friend of mine, lost everything. Went out there, fought the war, was hardworking, worked every day of his life. He's 48 years old, had two kids, have a wife, and he came back injured. Lost his arm, lost his leg, not able to work, and he can't even get medical insurance. So because of these things, that's what just one of the reasons why I started Operation We Care. Another reason was with the youth, you get a lot of older people that are disassociated from our youth. And we always complain about the problems and what these kids are doing, and they're doing this and they're doing. But we're not offering realistic solutions, okay? We want the drug dealers off the streets, but we say go get a job at McDonald's. And if I got five or six kids, okay, I'm just speaking real, and I'm making $10,000 a day. There's no way I'm going to go from that to 150 to make you feel better about yourself because I look better for you. You know, why not start a business? Be an entrepreneur. You've already been doing business bad, the wrong way. Now do business the right way. So because of stuff like that, and even having a workshop for these kids, because there's nothing to do. When I grew up as a youth, there was the Boys Club. You had the Pell. You had Mayor Summer Youth Program. It's bad now because the economy has switched so much that when I grew up, it was like McDonald's was like the last job we were getting. I'd rather go get a job at the mall, or I get a job at the bank. McDonald's the last thing. You got now middle-aged adults, you know, that's their career now. The mall jobs and these supermarket jobs and these other jobs that we were looking upon, McDonald's and all that when we were kids, are now being taken by senior citizens because they're reliable. Most people, the employers are going to look for what's most cost-effective. The seniors are not going to complain. They're already getting a pension. This is actually a little money for their check. They're going to be reliable. They're going to come on time. So now that just cuts all the kids out of the equation. So, I mean, it goes back. It goes again. And then you got kids who are trying, who are homeless, because nowadays, like you said, the mom's on crack, the father's on this or that or what have you. And, you know, they're fending for themselves. I know kids are fending for themselves at 7 and 8 years old. I met a little kid down the street that was 6 years old, and I lost my mind when I found that he didn't have no mom, he had no father, his parents had, you know, was burnt up in the fire, he was trying to be a part of the system, you know, one of the houses that he was at, the man was molesting him and raping him, and one of my friends just took him in about 2 months ago. So, I mean, you hear stories like that, it's horrendous, and that's the reason why Operation We Care exists, because you got people out here that, like, you know, CG's saying they're starting these things, but they're starting it to get a tax write-off or to look good. It's a difference between somebody doing something from the heart and somebody doing something for a piece of paper. And for us, you know, for me, it's real, you know what I mean? It's so real that I got 3 boys I'm raising, my sister got cancer, and they went homeless. I had to grab them. So, I mean, it's real. So, I mean, for me, it's something I feel. I've been through it myself, so I'm passionate about it.
And we thank you for that. We definitely thank you for that.
That's beautiful. It is.
I mean, but you know what, though? I mean, just the smile on people's faces, thanks enough. I don't do it. I appreciate it. But I'm not doing it really for a pat on the back. I mean, I just think that people, like, there need to be more organizations like yourself, like mine, and people really taking it for real and really doing something. I mean, it's easy to talk about something, but it's another thing to walk in them shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Right about that. It's the truth. Pete, how can they contact you? I know they can contact through us. We'll have the information posted up, but for the listeners, tell them where they can contact in regards to Operation We Care and stuff.
Oh, real, real easy. Listen, for those people that are in need or need some, we want to hear your stories. We want to connect with you. You can go to Operation We Care, and that's OPOR, spell operation, but with an O instead of an E, OPRATION, We Care. .com, or check out our blogspot, which is operationwecare.blogspot.com. And then we also have operationwecare.com coming pretty soon. And like I said, we're looking to, not only are we looking for people that can help support the movement, but if you're out there and you're listening to this show and you're suffering and you need some help, you know, let us help point you in the right direction and help you out as well and do what we can, you know, to assist you. Okay, we're not a large organization. We're a newly founded organization where we consist of, you know, maybe about like 15, 20, but we're growing every day. We also work close with Humanity Healing, who have a real large database. Well, there are over like 60,000 people involved, but our thing is we may be small, but we care, we're effective, and we're trying to, you know, outreach, you know, with everybody. And you can call me direct. I mean, you got the number. If you need my number, you can contact me directly at area code 757-224-3581, and that's for Operation We Care. And I mean, or you can email me operationwecare@gmail.com, OPORATION, We Care at gmail.com. I mean, you know, like our slogan say, we care, do you. It's time for people to be more, you know, pro about movements, not just my movement. If, you know, support your local shelter, support, you know, street queens, support people who are actually trying to make a difference, because like CG said, it's a lot of people that are just doing it for the name, and, you know, it's sad, you know, because what happened is these people, you know, suffers a lot of, you know, stereotypical, you know, views on the homeless people, which doesn't make sense. Like I asked a lady just the other week where we were talking, and it was sad because this lady was a judge, and she was just judging, well, all these homeless people, they just need to get a job and this, that, and the third. And I said, well, okay, well, how many employment opportunities are you giving?
Right.
And it was whistles. Do you pay some people to take out your garbage, clean up your office? Well, I don't know, because I said, well, then what are you doing to help the problem? I hear what you're saying, but and then, you know, I gave a guy, he's going to go spend it on liquor. I said, what would you expect the person to spend it on? And this is for all you people listening, I want to break one misconception that a lot of people have in regards to alcoholics and homelessness. Let me explain something to y'all people out there. It's cold outside. If you are rubbing your hands and you're only out there for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, okay, or 5 at the max for most people because they get out of their car and go right to where they're going. Imagine standing out in that cold 24 hours.
Yeah,
imagine sleeping, having your body only carries so much temperature. So why alcohol? Why homeless people drink? Because alcohol is known that it warms the blood, and they don't freeze at night. Okay, because if they didn't actually drink, they would freeze to death.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you prefer? So before the next time you judge a person for carrying a bottle, if you're not opening your home, then you have no right to make a judgment call.
Mm-hmm. And that's peace.
Mm-hmm. Peace on that one. Hold on the line with us, V. We about to go into what you think about, you know, Obama's policies as we know it in regards to this whole situation, man, with economy, jobs, and money, you know what I'm saying? And we're going to go back to Miss Toy, and we're going to follow up with you, V. All right? Could you hold for us?
No problem.
All right. Toy, how do you feel about that, man, with the whole Obama situation, man? Hello, Toy? Toy? Okay. CG?
Yes, I'm here.
Obama?
Yeah. Well, I'll have something to say about this. Obama's policies, his economic policy, for one thing, let me start off with this. Middle class. And what some people think middle class means that, you know, in certain extent, it does mean you're doing okay. But some means it's kind of like what Cool V said, you're one check away from being, you know, from being lower class or what they consider lower class. Middle class doesn't always mean that, you know, you're living okay, but it just means that we, you know, have it better than what we could have had. And the jobs that he's providing, the jobs that he's opening up, I don't know if you guys remember, but before when he was a senator in Illinois and he went back because there was no jobs in there was no jobs in Illinois. He went back to try to look for locations and with those plants and those warehouses and everything. That's the type of person he is. He's opening up, especially in New Jersey, and I don't know if anybody else is in this area, but it's hard now to find a job. And I know it's all over the world, but in the New Jersey area, just point blank, it's just hard. There's layoffs. The place that I'm at, they just cut. It's 14 people who work there. They just laid off 4. Okay, he predicted with his economic plan that, what did he say, it will be, what, 200,000 jobs? Is that what he said it will be? Don't quote me. I'm asking anybody else who knows. Is it 200,000 jobs that he said he would provide within, would be opening up? Yeah. I mean, even with the budget, and they're providing this money for the budget, it's helping. Because you have to spend money to make money. They're opening businesses. He's trying to open corporations to give people jobs, anything. You know, things for people to build. You know, you're building bridges that give people, you know, jobs. You're building stores that give people jobs. People look at it as if he's spending a whole bunch of money and that the money is going nowhere. But all these things that I think he's trying to add as far as building new roads, shutting certain locations down and building new pavements and new bridges, you have to understand it creates jobs for people. It creates jobs for that man who has 4 children and all he knows is construction, and he can't get a job anywhere else because no one's hiring because times are hard. You know, and it creates jobs for those people who, you know, want to drive. And, you know, a lot of these trucking companies are shutting down. They can't afford to ship food. They can't. Restaurants are shutting down. They can't afford to have their food shipped to them. It's so expensive now, and even though gas is going down, you know, we should be thankful for that, but it's just so expensive just to have a business. It's hard for business owners to stay business owners. Yeah, if you own your business, it's hard for you to do that now.
Amen.
You know, so it's,
And even if you want to provide jobs for other people, even if you want to, you can't, because you can't even keep the business yourself. And nobody's helping. They're not giving. They're so the banks are not giving out loans now. Why would they give a loan? It's kind of like, all right, why would we give a loan to somebody who we're not sure if we can get it back because they can't, you know, structure their business right now and pay us back? They don't want to hear that you have a payment plan. They don't want to hear that you have a long-term goal. They don't want to hear that. Right now, if you got the money and if you got, you know, that reputation with you, then, yeah, we'll give you money. But the banks are not cutting checks to any small businesses.
Yeah, the bailout ended that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bailout ended that. And the stocks, oh, my goodness, are you paying attention to the stocks? Anybody who's in stocks, any stockbroker right now is not doing anything with their money because they're terrified. You know, nobody's investing. Nobody's investing. You're holding on to your money. It's kind of like, you know, if I had $100 right now and Lush, you came to me and said, look, I want to start something up. Can I get 25 of that? Look, I don't know when you could pay me that back. Mm-hmm. You know, well, before I would say, all right, she's got a payment. You know, she's got a layout. She's got a little plan. She could give it back to me. I don't know when you could pay me that back, and I can't afford to give it to you. So I'm keeping it. And that's exactly what's happening with the banks.
That's the truth, CJ. You ain't never lied about that one, man. Jesus Christ, that's some serious stuff right there, man. Food for thought, man. Javita, how you feel about that situation?
Well, I agree with CJ when it comes to the jobs and the economy. I mean, until we can, like, come up with some new jobs for people to have, there's no way we can begin to combat homelessness. As a matter of fact, you know, I want to back it up to where when you were talking about how the lack of homes for children age out of foster care contributes to drugs, prostitution, rape, theft, and other violent behaviors. You know, this is extremely significant. When you look at the amount of abuse, a lot of people don't know that 14% of 225 serial killers are adoptees, and that comes from the amount of abuse and things that they take when they're in these foster care and adoptive homes, that a lot of people are beat and abused and raped, and I have heard some of the most awful horror stories, and even in my own life, even though I haven't had any adoption, you know, abuse in general is hard to take, whether you had to endure it from somebody else who's a stranger or somebody who's an immediate family member. So, you know, that hits extremely close to home. But when you talk about them being homeless, a lot of them go to prison and things just so they'll have a place to stay because, you know, 33% of them will experience homelessness within the 12 or 18 months after leaving foster care. And without homes for them to go to and adequate shelters and transitional housing set in place for these kids who age out of the system, that we're going to continue to have this problem with them trickling down. Because when you look at people who become prostitutes and drug dealers and things like that, you can't sit up there and judge them because you don't know exactly their life. A lot of them do exactly what they have to do to survive until they find something that's better. And, of course, with the economy being what it is, you definitely can't expect them to have a jump. And as far as what Cool V was saying about older people getting the jobs, I understand that completely because older people are reliable, and who's taking up these jobs are baby boomers between the ages of 42 and 63. Because they like to have the idea that, hey, I'm important, I still have something to do, and people take me seriously. You know, those are the people who are part of the movement, and they actually are part of that same proactiveness. And that's why we need to push those same type of ethics and morality standards in today's children and youth, because until they have that type of internal drive in them, we're going to continue to see this increasing amount of slacking off in terms of work ethic. But in terms of foster and adoptive kids, that for them is not an option. It's not a matter of them being slacked off anything like that. You know, they try very hard, and they want very much to be accepted and to be loved and to be taken in and to be held by somebody, anybody who cares about them. And a lot of time that turns into abuse because a lot of them tend to think that, hey, I can find that same comfort in a man or a woman in another relationship, and it's not the same thing as when it comes from a parent. And until they address that you have to find peace and make peace with that in your own terms and find a way to move on and to grow from that. But it's really sad what happens in today's society and economy, but like everything stems from money. honestly. And until we have adequate amount of funding and we raise money and we do the necessary things that we need to do to advocate with lobbyists and change the laws and policies that are in place nowadays, we're going to continue to have the same issues.
And that's the truth, man. That's the truth. Lissette, how you feel about that situation, Lissette?
I got to tell you, when I started researching information about, you know, shelters and jobs and everything in New York, I was overwhelmed. I was really overwhelmed. It seems like there's a handful of support systems versus the number of people who need this assistance. You know what I'm saying? And so to try to reach out and help these people, we need more leaders. I agree with Kuvi, we need more leaders. Last year alone, I was able to employ about 5 teenagers, okay? And it felt wonderful, and I want to do that on a greater scale. But the truth of the matter is that it's rough for small business owners, and it's amazing. I think that if somebody wants to secure a job right now, go to the gas and light company, because you will always need gas and you always need light. as far as anything else goes, and trust me, I work at a nonprofit, and we just experienced a 20%, well, we're in transition. We're about to get cut 20% of our salaries.
Wow.
And I'm praying on it, and I'm looking around, and I'm hoping that it doesn't come through. But the nonprofits are suffering right now, and it's sad because I see a lot of kids who come from foster care into these art programs, and they find a family within the creative arts. You know, so to just think about that being cut is so sad. And if things are not rough as is, the mayor Bloomberg is talking about a 2.5% budget cut for these programs.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? So, like I said, you wanna secure something, go to the gas company. It's very serious.
Yeah. I think that's why Obama's, you know, he's investing $150 billion in alternative energy, you know, and then that's going to create jobs as well, you know, as far as, like, the gas.
Yeah, that whole gold thing or whatever that they got going on. For real, man, it's crazy, man. Emma, how you feel about the situation, Emma?
I mean, what about those people that can't even fill out applications to work in the gas company? What happens to them? And which are these kids that are 18 years old coming out the foster system because they're too busy just trying to learn life skills and protect themselves that forget about them learning how to read or write. You know, when you're learning survival skills is what you're going to eat the next day. Let me hold this bag of M&Ms that can last me the whole week, this bag of potato chips. You're not thinking about, oh, I got to learn my math and my reading and all that because you're not in that mindset. You know, you're thinking on survival mode. So now they push them out with $200, a little bit of money, whatever, go get a job. They can't even fill out an application. So all these jobs could be created, but if you don't prepare these children that become young adults, you know, to be able to fill out application, like someone had said earlier, and show them what it is to be in the workplace and all that, then it's still at no point. It still doesn't do them any justice or any service. And it's hard, like Lizette said too, and somebody else mentioned before her about you know, us having businesses, but yet not being able to really, you know, give other people jobs. It's not that we don't want to, it's that they make it hard for us, you know, with the taxes and just all the ridiculous stuff that they try to put us through, you know. I mean, and we still push on our dream, you know, our movement, because that's, we just, you know, we're strong at that, but not everybody's that strong. You know, mentally, physically, not everybody can be able to really endure a lot of things at the same time for whatever reason, you know, and whatever struggles they've gone through their life. But it takes a whole bunch of us. It takes 1,000 V's, it takes 1,000 Emmas and 1,000 CGs and 1,000 Lush to continue to be able to make a change, even if it's at one kid at a time. And I stress that a lot because I'm 40 years old, and I've been raising other people's kids since I was 17 years old. And I've touched a lot of children in my life, one kid at a time, and it does make a difference.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
My neighbors, you know, everywhere I've lived, you know, I live in Philadelphia, but I lived in New York all my life, and everywhere I've always lived, even if it was my neighbors, and I knew that she was going through struggles and she wasn't making it that good, she had 3 or 4 kids, I made it my business that come Christmas time or even Thanksgiving, or even I make sure I knew when their birthday was and come and bring them an extra gift, or even just to walk them to the store. Come on, let me, here's a bag of potato chips or soda. It means so little to you, but it means so much to them to know that aside from their family, someone else cares. The neighbor cared. The lady from down the block, you know, she cared. Or the lady from the store or whatever, she actually came and brought me something or thought about me. Or look, she bought this for me, you know, something new for me. You know, these kids get things passed down. But when you give them something new, it's like, wow, this is for me, like mine, you know. And they hardly feel that. They hardly feel that pleasure where this is just for me, you know. And it's one kid at a time. That's all I can just continue to stress is one kid at a time. You know, we don't have to make big moves, but it's those little moves that we know, you know, the person that lives down the block or 2 blocks from us or whatever, that we see that we know that they're struggling. We know that they're not making it too, you know. And you want to give people pride, you know, you don't want to make them feel like they're begging or whatever. So you have to learn how to do things in a slick way, although you're trying to help, but you know, little, oh, look, I had this extra, whatever, blah, blah, like it's nothing, but actually it's really something to them. But some people still have pride, even homeless people. I've been homeless and I have my pride still. You know, I didn't want to take things from people, whatever, but when you have children, you know, you got to take that, put that pride to the side, and your kid got to eat, and your kid got to be warm, you know? And so, you know, that the pride goes to the side on that. But you know, I'm just saying it just takes one kid at a time. You know, they say it takes a village, and, you know, us villagers got to step forward. And even in this bad time, we don't have it. I don't have it like that. But if when my mother always said, we're in a household where you could feed one, you feed 10. You know, and if you got to stretch it out for everybody, then that's what it is. You know, God sees your heart, and he provides. And when you give unselfishly, you will be amazed at how God will bring that back to you. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
Toy, how you feel about that whole situation, Toy?
I'm sorry. I had taken, I disappeared for a second, but I'm back. I got the tail end of a lot of important issues that you touched upon, and I think that Obama has a very good theory, but without the cooperation of every single citizen in the United States, regardless of your financial situation, is not going to work. You know, I personally think that, you know, within our communities and, you know, in our cities, we have to just be smart. I mean, there's a lot of resources that every state provides. Every state is different, but like I know in Massachusetts, there are a lot of coalitions. There are a lot of people that are starting up with these, you know, the green jobs, and they're being educated about how to, you know, kind of change the environment now, because that's the most important thing. If we have no earth, forget about the economy, forget about all the other struggles, we have nowhere to live. So if you haven't had an opportunity to learn about the green jobs and the programs that are being implemented to create some jobs surrounding those causes, you should probably do some research. And also, just being smart about your money. I mean, you have to spend money to make money. You know, it doesn't make any sense. People are so tight with their wallets now, so tight with their money, but people have to understand that money has to be spent in order for money to recycle, you know? So I feel like it's, even though we do have to tighten our wallets, we do have to also think of ways to create jobs and go out there and support the endeavors, you know, in your city, you know, to be able to create those jobs and support, you know, the agendas of your state that are trying to create jobs.
And that's the truth right there, man. Everybody touched on good points, ladies, for real. And myself, Lush speaking, I've been homeless before. I've been in the shelters with my daughter, my 5-year-old. She's beautiful. Yo, I had to humble myself. I went in the shelter. They treated us like we was real talk. Some of the food was molded in there. The people, when they people done stuff, half of the staff, half of the stuff before we even got to touch it. Half of the children had diarrhea and got sick from there. Half of the rooms was infected with bed bugs. Yeah. Roaches, you know what I'm saying? My daughter would cry sometimes. My dog would ask me, Mommy, when we getting out of here? Mommy, I don't like this place. I had to do one up, and I was blind. I said, I'm not going to be in here long. I don't deserve to help myself. But you know what? Like I said in my poem on Faith, I remember them days when I was taking bird baths inside the you know what I'm saying, the Burger King to get ready to go take to school. Them times when I had to leave the shelter, they lock you out your room. Even if you working, they lock you out your room. You can't even get no rest. You got to go on like Burger King or some of these public bathrooms just to take a nap. You know what I'm saying? This is not a game. You know what I mean? People sit here and judge people. I can't judge nobody. I done walked in the shoes. I done felt the pain. I done seen my daughter's face. You know what I'm saying? I can't go back there. But any time that I feel, even if it's my last, I'm going to give it. Because you know what? I've been there. Somebody extended their hand out to me. That's why I love my church. I'm not a religious person, but I'm spiritual. And they have my back. Shout out to, Mount Calvary, Missionary Baptist Church, you know, my pastor, McCray, you know, they looked up for me, man. My daughter, I don't know what I'll do. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have this show if I didn't have the determination and that faith in order to keep pushing. Some people don't have it. Some people give up. A lot of people on the street is mentally ill. They don't got enough money to get their medicine. Sometimes they asking for a dollar, but you judging them. You looking at them crazy. They want to get a dollar to go to McDonald's to get food for their baby, son. Mm-hmm. And you looking at them crazy. You know what I'm saying? They standing out there suffering. You know what I'm saying? They going through stuff, and people are sitting there judging them. They don't know their story. They don't know what they went through. They could have been abused. They could have been in a bad relationship, and they out there with their kids, or they out there just suffering, and you don't know what's going on with them. But you have the right and audacity when you can't even open your home. You can't even get them no coffee. You can't even bring them in a place that's warm. All they're asking for is a warm jacket to keep warm out there. But just
that's
you judge. A paycheck
that's
away from yourself.
Real talk.
I apologize for right now.
I mean, if you know what, do what you're doing and be real. And if I may touch on something, Lush, this is Cool V speaking. All you ladies have a valid point. And on one real thing that people have to remember is that we've lost compassion in this day and age. I think that the media have desensitized us, and we follow corporate America. Everybody's trying to live the American dream of, okay, you know, do for yourself, get for yourself. But let me tell you the hypocrisy in that. They tell you keep for themselves, but it was a nation of corporate companies that got together during the Enron scandal, okay? So if it was do for self, they wasn't doing, they did for self, but they collaborated to do for self, okay? Viacom, which is the multimedia, you know, mongrel that controls everything that you see visually in the United States, okay? And they work together. Because they understand the power of networking. But they keep small businesses and people are like, you know, disenfranchised. And what people don't realize is as long as, you know, society can keep you disenfranchised and disunified, then they can do what they want. That's the reason why the whole 9/11 event went down, why the war been popping off, because we don't pay attention. It's like the point and look theory, okay? If I point you somewhere else and you're looking elsewhere, I can really do more damage in your home because you're looking outside your home. And we've been looking and worried about everybody else's backyard but ours. It's amazing to me how we can spend billions of dollars, okay, on the lotto, okay, on the dollar and the dream, which is recycled through, of course, and they talk about the hood and dirty money and politics, but we all know what was founded with these casinos, and it all came from, you know, of course, illegal drug money, which half of America's founded on. Okay, we're a nation of hypocrisy, and it's not going to take, Obama's not going to come and be the savior. He's not Jesus, he's one man. So it takes all of us to stand up and start being leaders. Stop waiting to follow the next man, and or start your own plan. And it's like, I'm not sure if it was Emma, I think Emma talked about it. I grew up in a generation where you had an older person, and when he was doing bad, he would tell you, young blood, you don't want to be like me. You had people that cared. Your society cared. Older people could talk to you. You took it in as a young cat. You wasn't beating up and putting old people on fire and talking crazy because you respected life. We don't respect life no more. And now it's cool. The people call themselves. Now, I'm going to tell you, and this is for all these street cats that's listening and talk about being hardcore in the street. Real bad boys move in silence, and we don't do idiotic bull crap to get attention. Beating up your man is not cool. That's not being real. It's not a hood to shoot somebody in the back, you know, and see, you want to be a hood, throw the guns down, fight a fair one. That's how tough you really are, because that's how, when I was raised, if you was a man, you went with your own, too. We have no more of that. So basically, the whole morale system has went down the drain, and it's time for us to come back to caring. Y'all see, we're giving, not giving a damn about nobody else. The problem is, we don't care about the house down the street till it hits next door. Okay, we don't care about rapists until it's our family member get raped. We don't care about teen violence until it's our cousin that got shot, or one of our people that got hit, you know, your mother, your father, your uncle by an innocent bullet. I mean, when I was growing up at the age of 15, I was walking down the street, and I watched my man get his head blown off next to me, you know, when somebody was shooting after somebody else. And I didn't know how important that was, and I didn't, you know, I was young. I wasn't caring about society. I'm 15. You know, I mean, but I knew about a lot because I was homeless at the age of 14, knew the streets, and I seen a lot of things. And the thing was, you become cold-hearted. And what happened is, you know, it's like the young lady who spoke out first, I'm thinking with CJ, when she was talking about how the job system is, how we're complaining about what Obama's putting into it. And like, you know, the young lady, I think it was Toy, just said, you got to spend money to make money. It's right. You have to recycle that money. And the problem that we're doing is we're picking at the wrong factors. Okay, whenever somebody's doing something positive, we're going through, they go to scrutinize, we have to go through. But when the stupidness is going on that you see that's making millions and millions of dollars, we're not factoring that. You want to focus your energy about looking at research or something? Why don't you look at all these things that's transpired with all the different events that's happened since, you know, the 9/11, since the unemployment decrease? You got a guy got a videotape called Bum Fights. I'm pretty sure everybody may have heard about it or seen it that's on his phone conversation, where a man can legally go around and mutilate, beat up, do all type of horrendous acts to people that are homeless. They need the money, so they're desperate. They're doing anything. And he's making fun of the sister. The whole mockery, the whole thing, it's a joke to him because he's a white boy that lives in the burbs. He don't have a problem, so he went to the hood and came here to tape us like monkeys. Meanwhile, you got Michael Vick, who's in jail serving time over having a dog fight. Now, we got something wrong with this country when a dog takes precedence over human life.
Talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not saying that, you know, I don't care about dogs because I think that's wrong, but at the end of the day, too, if you're going to put people in jail for dogs, then you need to do it for humans. So, I mean, it's a lot of things that
the punishment should serve the crime. The punishment should serve the crime.
It shows soot. And my thing is this, too. I'm not saying that I agree with doing fight, but my bottom line is this. We got way more important matters to care about than us caring about everybody else's business. Now, I have no problem. I definitely want to help other countries because I feel like, you know, we need to reach out and touch people. But first, your mom tells you, everybody come from a household where your grandmother, your pop tells you, take care of home first, baby.
Mm-hmm.
You can't feed outside the house when your whole house, it's like you trying to build another home when your foundation is falling in. Okay, and it's time for us to start caring about one another. Our problem is that, you know what, you have these old stereotypical fools who was taught ignorance because that's a learned process. You don't just grow up racist. You don't grow up ignorant. All these stereotypes have to be taught to you. So the problem is you got people just holding on to it and holding on to the pride because it was the good old days. It felt good to be stereotypical about a person. So we got to keep people divided. So what we'll do is we'll keep – I don't know if you noticed. Pay attention to TV. They're recycling hatred, okay? That's why they're bringing back a lot of these slave movies. They're bringing back a lot of these, terrorist movies and different things because as long as we're hating everybody else and still looking at what's going on right here in the U.S., we're going to keep being fools. So the bottom line is, anybody's doing something, I'm for Obama started. We can't say nothing about Obama because if you want to fuss about the administration, none of us was sitting out there protesting and really going hard against George Bush. So
that's
if you ain't
right.
Going to go around against that idiot, he took 8 years of our lives.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're going to get mad about somebody just walked in for 2 seconds. He ain't even been in the house yet.
Right.
And everybody's scrutinizing them. But you wasn't saying that just 8 years ago. So for me personally, I don't give a fuck about what anybody got to say about Obama because he can't be no worse than what old boy just left us with.
Mm,
that's right.
True. You done said
it.
There's no doubt about that one. And And I apologize for crying.
You don't got to apologize.
No,
you don't
apologize.
You're
talking about what's real.
That's
something real. I mean, you know, when you go, I mean, you got to express what you feel. And I'm glad you did that because that just lets somebody know that's listening that you're human, that you care, that you really actually been through something. And people out here, it's not a joke. I mean, it ain't funny because when you really seriously dealing with hunger, you really living in them situations, it ain't something you smiling and bragging about and talking about. That's why I understand how some of these people come out and talk the way they talk when God has blessed them. Because if you truly come from this, this ain't no place you happy about ever being in. And you ain't trying to run back to the ghetto. I've never met a person yet that ran back to roaches and rats.
And that's
true. Daughter, you had your daughter there, and your daughter, trust me, she sees, and you're kind of molding her. My father, this is CJ speaking, my father, when we were young, would, I swear, every month he had a different homeless person living with us. He would take them off the street, and he would clean them up. We had a back room, you know, they had their own room, and give them a job until they were able to get their own places, you know, and I saw that growing up. She sees where your heart is, what you're doing growing up. And that's why whatever he did rubbed off on me. I never, ever, ever understood when I was younger why we had so many different people, you know, living with us. And I'm like, what? And then my dad taught me, you need to be open to these people because it could be you. You know,
it's
and
real.
Your
pops is a remarkable man, real talk.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's
definitely
true. I mean, I can share an experience. This is Toy speaking right now. I've been kind of quiet because I've been listening and taking a lot in because I respect the viewpoints of everybody that is on this show right now. I think that, you know, we as a unit are very strong to even addressing these topics, but I went through homelessness. You know, I'm 30 years old. Like I said, I do have two children. I went through homelessness, Lush. So when you said the things that you said, I had to give you the utmost respect because you are being real. It's like opening a fresh wound when I listen to, you know, some of the stories of people that have gone through some of the similar things that I've gone through. You know, I was homeless when I was 6 months pregnant with my son, and I already had a 5-year-old daughter. So I know. But now, you know, man, 5 years later, I've been very focused and been very resourceful, and I've been very smart about, you know, staying focused on my goals and handling my business, so I'm doing much better. But I did take in my uncle, who he's been homeless, literally homeless, living on the streets for about 8 years now. And that's because my family frowned upon him. And I never really understood. They used to tell me he was crazy. They used to tell me that he was, you know, psycho, whatever the case may be. But when I really sat down and had a conversation with him one day, I bumped into him at a bar. And I sat down and had a conversation with him and realized that my uncle is not crazy at all. He's
got a lot of sense.
He's super intelligent. And as a matter of fact, I touched upon this in a conference call. You know, he goes over to MIT, which is a Ivy League school now, and these people have taken him in and helped him to, you know, approach some of his patent ideas and some of his business ideas that he's had, and they're helping him to cultivate some of these dreams that he's had held and take notes of like 8 years. He's had notes that he's kept, you know, throughout him being homeless, and they're great ideas, and there are people at MIT that see genius in him. So it's like, you know, when you guys are saying don't judge people that are homeless, that is the God honest truth. You don't know where people came from, and you don't know where they're going, and you, God will humble you if you judge another person based upon their circumstance, you know. So I did open my door for him, and he's been with me for 6 months, and when I say the man has cleaned up, he's shaven, he's clean, he gets up every day, and he's so motivated. He joined the gym. He's like, you know, oh, I went to this business meeting, and I'm meeting with these venture capitalists, and he's teaching me now.
Oh,
and
they
it's
wanted a chance.
Inspiring. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly, Kobe. That's exactly what they deserve, is a chance and someone to listen and understand. And don't judge them because they may be dirty or may be a little intoxicated, because I personally live on the street.
I know people who feel if you've been homeless and you've been living in the street for months at a time, or, you know, how, and I don't have no the basic necessities, toiletries, you know, grooming products, how am I supposed to look?
Yeah. It's true.
That's the truth. And that, that brings us back. Like, I don't know if you guys seen the family that prays together. That whole Tyler Perry movie. There was a gentleman in there that used to come in there dirty all that time. And the lady that was in there, you know, she just worked, always made sure he ate. and stuff like that. And the daughter would judge him like, this dirty dude. But in the end, he actually was a stockbroker, actually, that got fired, and he was very smart and was giving her advice. And she ended up being a millionaire. He ended up getting his life back. So you never judge a book by its cover, point blank. You know what I'm saying? And you know, since we know we're on a short period of time, and, you know, this is a deep subject, and we will touch upon it again, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, like I said, it's the cold season. People, extend your hand, man. It only takes a little bit to do the right thing. And, you know, ending this off, Emma, I want you to go ahead and do, you know, the closing remarks. And we want to thank you, Cool V, and we want to thank Brandon and thank Toy for, you know, reaching out to Brandon and all the women and, you know what I'm saying, for providing all your thoughts. Emma, go ahead and give the closing remarks, Emma.
Well, I mean, basically the whole show, what it was about was the foster system of the children. We all had definitely a lot of insight, a lot of information that was given. We touched upon the kids coming out of the foster system when they age out at 18, where there's really nothing else right after that. They come out with maybe a little bit of money. And really nothing secure for them, so it becomes like they were in the system young, and now they're in the system. You know, they just continue to be in the system, and you know, no really assistance for them. We touched on them being molested in there, inside you know, the foster system as well. Homelessness, how people judge and look at homeless people just because they see them in the street. And V made a real valid point as far as the liquor thing. You know, people always saying, no, I don't want to give a dollar, I don't want to give my money because they're just going to go get drunk. And he made a valid point to the listeners to really know that the reason why they do liquor is not necessarily they like the taste of liquor, but if you had to be out in the street in the freezing cold for 24 hours, you know, 12 hours a day or whatever, you also going to find a way to keep warm, because you try to lay there even for an hour in the street just with a coat on or with anything on, you know, the blood only can get on, you know, warm so much. So it's not an excuse, but, you know, it's letting you know the reason, you know. We also touched up on, you know, solutions that we can be able to help, but really our hands are kind of tied up. But there are solutions that we can do, and that's far as, you know, one kid at a time, you know, being more involved in your community, in your friends, you know, not turning the other way, the other cheek. When we see something happening, you know, we need to kind of get involved, and not involved in the way to be nosy, but just involved in a way that people know that there is support, you know, because you never know what that family is going through at that moment, that they may need to reach out to you for whatever reason. You know, unless you got very emotional in the topic of, because you went through it, you know, there's a lot of people here on the panel that have been through homelessness, so we know from experience. And this is the reason why we gather together in this sisterhood, and accept, of course, a brotherhood, you know, to be able to make a change. And this is why the Street Queens definitely was born, and we back up and everybody that's in a positive movement, especially that's in a movement for the children and for the women, because we have to educate and empower our women a lot to be able to, you know, be able to withstand everything that, you know, that we go through. I commend you, Lush, you know, for going through what you went through, and you still on top. You know, Toy, everybody that's been through it, you know, it's hard. I've been through it. But we here. You know, we here because people care, because people extended their hand, because someone told us that we can do it. Someone told us we were beautiful. Someone told us we were strong. So we need to be able to, you know, give that back to other people so they can also, you know, build up their courage and their strength to move on to the next day. I think I wrapped it up like that.
That's the truth right there, and I thank you, Emma. You couldn't say it any better than that. That's what's up, man.
Ooh, that was my first time doing that.
Go, girl.
Go, girl. That's what
Jamita,
it is.
Jamita, how I did, Jamita?
You did great.
Thank you.
But I do need to add something, because when we were talking about networking, it was great that we had Homes for Little Wonders who came through, And, of course, I talked about GeorgiaSafe.org. But for those people who are out there who need places to go and who need to network with other organizations that are already pre-existing, who are actually truly out there trying to do things positive for the community like Operation We Care, go to www.amfor.net. That's www.amfor.net. And any additional websites will be posted after the show.
Also, I'm going to supply Javido Alesh with the shows and the different events that are coming up in the Boston area, supporting adoption and raising awareness for adoption, and that will be posted on the site as well.
That's what it is, man. And Street Queens Projects, Street Queens Christmas in Prison, that's going to go down. We got the stuff that's going to be posted on the blog site, so you can reach out to some of these people out there to keep your head up. We're going to be sending postcards. Street Queens Drive, we're going to be doing a drive for a lucky child this year. You know, so write us, you know, single mother with a child, you know, write us, you know.
We're adopting families.
We're adopting a family this year. Also, if you got beds to donate, that'll make some beds to us, Street Queens, the movement, from our hearts to your hearts, Teddy Bear Drive. We're giving it to the children that's in needy and foster care and stuff like that. We're doing a Toys for Tots. If you donate toys, we definitely send out thank you letters and stuff. And to, you know, make a young child happy this year in regards to, you know, getting a toy or something, you know. Also, Street Queens also donating clothes and supplies to a shelter out here in the DMV area. It's called a Community of Hope Administration. They're out in the DMV. You can email them at mwashington@communityofhopedc.org. It's a women and children's shelter, and they're always looking for uniforms for the kids, school supplies, and all that jazz. Donate. CG, one of our Street Queens panelists, they always have a Christmas party at the Friendship House for children going through foster care. December 20th will be this year, 2008. Donate to the Friendship House, www.friendshiphouse.org. We would love for you guys to, you know, ship anything that you can in regards to toys, teddy bears, or, you know, cars or something. ME2K Magazine is having the 7th annual Kris Kringle toy drive on December 3rd, 2008.
I don't mean to cut you off, but the Kris Kringle, what we did was in honor of my friend that just passed away, Party Artie. We're adopting actually his daughters. He left a 5 and a 14-year-old. So instead of us doing the regular thing that we do with that, we have a place and we have the kids come in. We've adopted his family plus two other families, and we're just going to directly go to their home and just take them their gifts.
Wow.
So that'll be our 7th annual, kind of, you know, made a little turn, but I think it's for the best. You know, they're missing their father at a very bad time, and we thought that this was something that definitely would, I mean, we always create an impact when we go out there and service these children, but I think that these kids mostly, you know, this young girl, she's 14, and you have the other one that's 5, that's going through this, and the family's going through it, you know, just finished spending all this money, you know, on funeral and everything else. So for everybody. So we made this decision actually today, where we're going to, you know, go and adopt his two daughters and along with other, you know, other kids that we personally know that are going through real bad times, and they range anywhere from the ages of 7 to, like, 12 kids that we're definitely actually going to make an impact this year. So that's how we're changing our Kris Kringle. Because initially when we started Kris Kringle Drive, it was actually going to the project, going to the streets, knocking on people's door and actually giving them gifts. That was the reason why that Kris Kringle was born, because Kris Kringle goes to the homes. So it wasn't for the children to come to us. It was actually for us to go to the children. So in our 7th year, we've actually finally really have done the Kris Kringle Drive, which will be this year.
Okay.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're very sorry. Our hearts go out to the whole family and everything for Party Artie that did pass and stuff. God rest his soul. And like I said, Nadine is still doing their canned food drive in South Carolina. Cool V, Operation We Care, Cool V, can you state the information and what you guys are doing out there?
Oh, crazy joints. Okay, we got a couple joints. I mean, to check it out, you can go to operationwecare.ning.com. We got a lot. We got hope, you know, hope for the holidays. We're giving out toys, you know, for tots as well as we're also helping out giving out, you know, food as well as clothing for the veterans because I think that's a forgotten generation. A lot of people are not really focusing on the veterans, and it's a lot of people that, you know, risk their life and limb to keep America safe, so they thought, and they came back, and they lost everything. You know, I ran into five families just in the course of this, you know, the past, you know, 5 months, which is crazy because you wouldn't think that there'd be that many people coming back, you know, losing everything. So I think that we need to start, you know, doing some caring about the veterans. And also, you know, like you know, the whole basis of the conversation, we're also doing some stuff for a lot of the disadvantaged youth because I have a friend, actually a couple, two families that I already know personally that adopts, you know, crack babies, okay? And my friend Katie just got, like, five kids with the same thing, and her family been doing it for years. So we're going to do the kind of the same thing, you know, so sort of emulate the same thing what Emma's doing, but just same thing, helping out where we can and how we can, and we also support our local shelters. I mean, just that simple. I mean, we out here trying to make a difference. Anything out in the VA, we trying to touch.
That's what it is. And like I said, send any letters or donations. Also, Dar's doing Jaden's Closet for the cancer patients and stuff like that. Send any letters or donations and et cetera to Street Queens, the official P.O. Box at 30126 Capitol Heights, Maryland, 20731. Once again, P.O. Box 30126 Capitol Heights, Maryland, 20731.
And
know that all those donations go to a positive
thing,
cause.
Anything
that's donated to the Street Queens.
There's
going to
be a petition I'm going to be sending out all you young ladies that we're trying to actually get them to go against it. I don't know if y'all have been paying attention, but the U.S. Congress have actually started a bill where they have, it's already in two cities. It's in Florida and it's in California, where now people are getting fined for feeding the homeless. So we're trying to go against that bill because that's freaking crazy. You know, you can give to everything else, and you can't even feed the homeless. And then you wonder why these people are going around, and you got so much crime and so much going on. I mean, you're not giving people alternatives these days.
How can you go about, like, petitioning against that? Or do you know anywhere?
Bill, it's a petition that's already going on, so I'm going to forward it to you as well.
Okay, great, beautiful.
I'm going to see you. I mean, like I said, it's a couple things. It's two different positions. It's another one, too, where they have this says don't let, you know, of course, old boy off the hook because it's a lot that they've been doing, and, you know, people are upset about that. So if you're upset with what the people are doing, I mean, it's all about just really filling out these forms. The problem with a lot of us is that they do paperwork, but they do it under our nose. You follow? So a lot of these things get passed. A lot of stupid things are pushed because we don't see, and out of sight equals out of mind. So we can't complain after it's done. But the problem is they try to do it in the dark. But at the end of the day, I got a glimpse of it. I just wanted to share that with people. If you guys don't believe me, you can go on YouTube. You can type it, and it says, and just type in don't feed the homeless, and you'll see it all come up.
So that's some real information right there. If petition information, we'll post it on Street Queens, the movement, .ning.com, and also on Operation We Care, .ning.com. Instead of the, you know, it's OR, you know what I'm saying, Operation We Care, you can find all that information listed and all the different things that's going on in regards if you want to help out. And all donations and all clothing is going to a good cause, and you know what I'm saying, and you're going to put a smile on somebody's face, man. Somebody that, you know, if you got clothes that are intact or something that you just bought and you really don't like it, send it in, you know, send it to us. You know what I'm saying? And we'll give it to somebody that truly, truly needs it and appreciates it. A warm jacket, a blanket, send it in. You know what I mean? Like I said, man, we need to start really, like, you know what I'm saying, really working together. Tune into our next week's show on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the state of giving, man. You know what I'm saying? Giving unselfishly. Like I said, go upload the show at www.blogtalkradio.com/thatsradioonline. Copy, blog it, send to your friends. Do what you do. You know, check us out at www.streetqueensthemovement.ning.com. Email us at streetqueensmovement@gmail.com. Hit us up at streetqueensthemovement.blogspot.com. Emma, you can read us the creed and the motto, you know what I'm saying, while we dip out.
I'm sorry, can I pass it to the ladies? I'm upstairs and I don't have it in front of me.
All right, I'll read it. The motto is to empower and support the diverse needs of people. Our creed is, street queens are here to show our future leaders the way, walking and talking life struggles every day. Like the sands of time, we are an invisible entity, bringing light into dark places and filling despair with hope. And this is our motto and our creed, and we live by it. And we're trying to shine light on all those dark places. I want to bid you a good night, and we want to thank all our callers, all of our listeners, all of our special guests, Cool V, Operation We Care, Brandon, thank you, Toy, for reaching out to him. Thank you to all my beautiful, strong street queens. And keep your head up, people out there, man. It's going to be all right. You know, we need to start working together. And like I said, you know, we encourage you guys to come to our show same time, same place, each Thursday at 8 o'clock. Log on. It's on and popping. Real talks, real subjects. Get empowered. Get heard. Listen. Spread the word. We love you. Have a nice day. Street Queens, we love you. Mwah.
Peace, Queens.
Peace, Queens.
Peace, Queens.